Hello and welcome to our second episode of the Blue Cup Tools podcast. I am Francisco Gonzalez, also known as Grundislav.
And I am Ben Chandler, known as 304.
And today we're going to talk about all sorts of fun things on our podcast. We'd like to make it clear from the get-go that we don't just... our first podcast was pretty focused on AGS, and we call our podcast Blue Cup Tools. But we are going to focus on not just adventure games, even though that's what we do. We're going to try and talk about the independent games, be they adventure games or not, and just general things. So if you don't like adventure games, you can still listen to our silly podcast. Just know
absolutely, we
probably talk about adventure games.
We're men of adventure, but that doesn't mean we can't be men of action as well.
Exactly, or even men of like hidden objects.
I haven't played a hidden object game for several years, but
I don't think that there are men of hidden objects. I think hidden object games, and I might get criticized for this, but I'm pretty sure hidden object games are mostly for like moms.
Well, I've played one hidden object game, which was called Special Inquiry Detail, and I only played it because I knew Steve Ince had done the writing for it, and it wasn't that bad, but it wasn't the gameplay. I was like, this isn't at all relevant. Why is finding parrots and bananas even relevant to solving a murder mystery? But anyway, we digress.
Yes, yes. So today's topic is backgrounds.
Oh yeah, we're talking about backgrounds today.
So backgrounds. You've made several games, and you have your particular style. So what's your favorite method of doing backgrounds?
It depends. When I first started making backgrounds, my main thing was I hated making backgrounds because they took so much time and I was so bad at them. So after trying a few different styles for a few different games, I eventually settled on using as few colors as possible, like a low-res, low-color pixel art palette, because I could do all the scenes for a game in, you know, a week. And I thought, this is such a great way because you know, it doesn't take lots of effort. I want to spend my time on getting the game made and not you know, drawing backgrounds forever. And they still look all right, you know. You go back and you see they're a bit lo-fi, but they do the job. But then I got what's called a tablet. And I love what I do now is I paint them.
I've heard of those tablets.
Yes.
You've
got one, I believe.
I do have one, yes. Yeah. Yeah, I've found that tablets help quite a bit in the painting of backgrounds.
You know, I speak to so many people who get a tablet and they try it and then they don't like it. They go, oh, I'm not used to it. You really have to, if you're going to get a tablet, get someone else's tablet, borrow it for a week and force yourself to try and use it. Don't give it two goes and then give up and go, oh, this isn't just for me. They're not like using a pen. They're not like using a paintbrush. They're not like using a pencil. They are something completely new, and it does take a lot of practice to get good with a tablet.
I think that's probably a very common occurrence. I think people think, oh, a tablet will make drawing things so much easier, and it's true. Tablet use does take some practice and getting used to, and I think that people get pretty easily frustrated when they find that they get a tablet and then they're not magically good at drawing. Because they seem to think tablet will fix their not their problem, because it's not really a problem, but a tablet is not a magical solution that's going to make all your stuff magically look amazingly painted and give it that painterly look. It does take some practice.
Oh yeah, everything, it's all in your technique and your skill. And I even know people that are good at drawing with pencils who try and draw with tablets and just can't do it. You need to practice. And like I said, I didn't have access to one, but if you've got a friend who's got one, go around to their place. I've had someone come over and use my tablet just to try it out. You know, let people try your tablet if you've got one. It's so much easier to decide. Otherwise, you've wasted, you know, they can be a couple of $100. They can be a couple of $1,000 if you buy one of the really expensive ones. So don't just go out there and buy a tablet without trying it if you've got the opportunity.
Is it weird that sounds like a euphemism to me? Like, hey, baby, want to come around to my house and use my tablet?
I think it's fair to say that 90% of the sentences we come up with could be construed as euphemisms if you chose, especially to us.
You're absolutely.
You made Backdoor Man. Everything's a euphemism to you.
Listen, there's a Backdoor Man is a perfectly legitimate phrase. It doesn't mean it's not referring to what everybody thinks it's referring to.
Okay, you made Ben Jordan.
Well, okay, BJ. I'll take full responsibility for that one.
We all know your secret.
Well, you do now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we all knew your secret before. It's not like you hid it very well.
Fair point.
Yes, so, ladies and gentlemen, if you hadn't heard it before,
yeah,
BJ really means that. Anyway.
Yeah. So I'm sure most people want to know, or at least I like to think that most people want to know because I'm a raging narcissist. People want to know what techniques we use in our backgrounds because having made several games with different backgrounds, and you've gotten quite some acclaim for your backgrounds. So what? Tell us a little bit about your technique, what it is you like to do and how you do it.
It absolutely depends on the atmosphere I'm going for. Sometimes with a background, you want to use a very closed, limited palette. And then what I'll do is I'll paint everything in grayscale. So I'll paint the whole background in black and white. And then I'll go and lay colors on the top afterwards. And that way you can really control your colors. And you can keep a very, very sort of a very limited palette feel. It gives it a kind of old school look. But you see even new school games do it. You look at games like Fallout 3. It's got a very, very limited palette. And that can be achieved if you go and do that. There's heaps of different layers you can use to add colour to your scenes, but there's a range of commonly used ones like Multiply that are good to get familiar with. So yeah. If I'm going for a more colourful scene, I paint each colour itself. And basically what I do when I'm painting a background is I start with light sources and shapes first. I go usually the sky, mostly if it's outside, and if it's got a big window, if it's inside. Otherwise, I'll get the strongest, most dominant light source, like a big light, and I'll paint that in, and then I'll paint the rough form of the street or the building or whatever, and then I work the colour onto the shape, and then I work the lighting on top of that. So it's all just mixing colours. You get people who use all these big adjustment layers to do lighting and everything like that, and I don't really do that. I just paint with the normal brush, with normal colours. I'm not very complex when I paint. A lot of people say, you know, how can I get more detail? And that's just using a smaller brush. I used to use enormous brushes for everything. Now, once I've blocked the shapes in, I go down to a 1 pixel style brush, 1 pixel size, and always, always, always have your tablet's pressure sensitivity set to size and opacity.
Ah, see, I don't have it set to opacity, just size.
Oh my, well, opacity really helps you blend the colors, you know? You wonder how you get smooth looking brush strokes, use opacity.
I'll have to try that out.
There you go. Even you've learned a tip today, Grins, the master of backgrounds from...
Hardly. I've been through so many different methods.
Yeah, well, I think we all have, and I just, this is a little bit of trivia for this, for the listeners, and you know this, but I don't think anybody else does. People have made fun at me for putting lots of lampposts in my games, and people go, what is with the lamppost? I remember back in 2007, when we were making our first Mags game, which was called Trans-Pacific, Ben Jordan 6 came out around that time, and there was a screen in that, I was playing it at the same time of, it was in the Greek town, there was a foreground object that was a lamppost, and it was such a nice lamppost. And I was like, wow, that's really nice. AGS games can look really good. It's kind of been an element that stuck in my mind of, you know, that adds character to a scene. So there you go. My work has been definitely inspired by Francisco Gonzalez, Paranormal Investigator.
I have to say I'm very humbled at the fact that you took inspiration from my crappy backgrounds and my lampposts.
And that was a lovely.
Well, thank you. I was. That's actually one of the. I drew that with the mouse, as I've told you, and I'm actually surprised and very pleased at how that turned out, considering, because that particular that particular game was when I was kind of getting to my peak of learning to draw with the mouse. Because, as I've said, I've gone through several phases of background drawing. I mean, when I made the very first Ben Jordan, I basically just opened up Photoshop and pretty much just threw up whatever colors came out. Because they were done very quickly and I wasn't paying too much attention to detail, and so I just did them with the mouse. And pretty much the same thing. I tried to get a little bit more detailed with the original case too, but that, yeah. So as I kept making more and more Ben Jordan games, I just kind of... I always did the backgrounds at their full size, I mean at their game size, 320 by 200, so it was a bit difficult to not so much get the detail, but it was also difficult to blend things together and things like that. But layers helped out a lot. What I would often layers, do, I wouldn't block out the shapes. I would just block out like the basic room structure. Like if it was an indoor scene, I would just do the walls, or if it was outdoors, I'd draw the sky and the horizon and then go adding things in. But then in case five, I decided to start tracing photographs, which I thought would be a good idea, but it really wasn't, because a lot of photographs are not really good adventure game backgrounds as far as composition goes. So, for instance, I can think of offhand, like the sushi restaurant bit. It's an okay background, photo-wise, but it didn't really work because it was like there was so much space, and then the counter was at this odd angle, so like the character behind the counter, it looks like it's this huge counter and he's on like a giant step ladder or something, because it just, the sprite really should be scaled up huge because he's closer to the foreground, but it didn't look right if I did that. So I just kept him like normal size, so he just looks like he's behind this huge counter. So the tracing photographs experiment wasn't really very much of a success, and I decided for case six to go back to the mouse. But when I started working on case six, I upgraded, because as we've established, I am a Luddite, and I was using Photoshop 5 all that time, and at that point I upgraded to Photoshop 6, which I still use to this day.
Oh, goodness.
Gasp. And Photoshop 6 had a big advantage over Photoshop 5, to me anyway, which was the splatter brush. And the splatter brush, I found, was very good for textures. And since there was a lot of sand and texture for trees and stuff in Case 6, I was able to, you know, messing around with the opacity and stuff, get some pretty nice texture and blending things in. I was pretty happy with how the backgrounds came out for Case 6. I think that was the first Ben Jordan game that I made where I was actually like, you know what, these backgrounds are actually pretty decent looking. And I was
Number 6 was definitely a nice looking game. I mean, considering if you go back and play Case 1 original, considering how far you've come, it's a very good achievement.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and I was still working at 320 by 200. So then case 7, halfway through that, I got a tablet, and it made things a lot easier as far as detail. Like, I know the very first background I ever drew with a tablet for Ben Jordan was the long scrolling hallway in the Vatican, and
I remember that.
I took advantage of the fact that I had the tablet, and I did like the very detailed statues and all that stuff. But then another thing that I did, or do still, which I've kind of gotten away from, was to preserve the look of the old school Sierra games, I downscaled the colors and I did dithering. So I used, you know, I painted them at however many colors, and then I would just dither it down to 256. So a lot of the detail and the colors were lost, but it gave it that old school Sierra look, which I thought was a good thing and kind of is, but it does definitely lose a lot of detail. And I know you're a fan of lots of colors.
I often think that the 32 million colors or whatever we have nowadays is just simply not enough. I honestly mean it. There are days when I just cannot find a color between these two colors I'm trying to blend, and they simply won't blend. So I'm kind of the opposite way. I started off with as few colors as possible, and now I'm just like, there's just not enough colors. I've done a complete turnaround.
So yeah, so for case 8, I don't want to talk too much about my method for that because I'm going to talk about it in the actual commentary for the game, which comes out on August 8th, everybody. So play that.
Yeah, we will.
Shameless self.
I'll review it.
Oh, God, don't do that.
On a podcast.
That would be the worst thing ever. It'll just be like an hour of you going, what were you thinking? What were you thinking?
Francisco, what was that ending? What was that?
He's in a carnival? What? Yeah.
Oh my god, spoiler!
No. No, if I made that the ending, I would be a real loser. So yeah, but basically to give a brief overview, I decided to do an experiment where I drew the backgrounds on paper and then scanned them and then did them in the computers. And I kind of like that, but I'm not going to do that anymore because what I've found that I really like now and what I've kind of settled on and what I'm going to use for my post-Ben Jordan game and what I used for Case 2 Deluxe was drawing them at 640 by 400 and then resizing them to 320 by 200. And again, you lose detail, but it sometimes comes out in a way or it blurs in a way that I find pleasing.
Yeah, well, there was a while there where I used to paint at 640, 480, and then resize down to 320. But I found, when I first started painting, I used to admire certain artists, and they all resized, and all of their work has this artifact that you get when you resize. It's hard to describe, but it puts an artifact into the background, and you can see it, and you go, oh, wow, that looks quite nice, but I no longer think these days I want every pixel to be where I put it. I don't want to rely on a program to put my pixels in for me, so I've stopped resizing. I think I stopped resizing around the start of last year. But yeah, I understand there's that it gives it a certain look and it's quite a nice look. Like it's a very recognizable look to me. But like you said, you do lose detail, and because I paint things with a 1 pixel brush now, I prefer to do it all myself. But I understand why resizing is good. It's good at hiding mistakes. I know that much. My mistakes are much more obvious now than they used to be.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably one of the main appeals of it. It makes things look a little bit magically cleaner.
Oh, yeah. It's not a perfect solution, but it can save a lot of time with your painting. But I've seen your resized stuff. It looks good. It looks lovely.
Well, thank you.
Do you still use the splatter brush for details?
I do, yes. I use the splatter brush mostly for textures, for like sand, dirt, or trees. It helps a lot. I posted a screenshot in the Release Something thread, which the palm trees
are you did. It was lovely.
Very splatter brushy.
I have a little cheat where I will paint. You know how you used to get the old games where they had the tiled backgrounds?
Sure.
I sort of do that with mine. I paint a little patch of texture, like say I'm doing grass or something like that. I'll paint a little bit of it, and then I'll copy that, and I'll paste it all over the image so I've got a whole field of grass, and then I paint the seams out so that it kind of looks natural. It's a big cheat, but man, it saves a lot of time. You can do it with wood, stone, anything. It's sort of like, sort of like tiling, but you have to neaten it all up. If you look at some of the backgrounds in Airwave, that's when I first started doing it, you can actually see I haven't cleaned up the seams that well, particularly in some of the earlier backgrounds, and you can see, if you look really closely, repeated blades of grass.
I'll have to look and scrutinize and say, Chandler, you lied to me!
You cheat!
Man, yeah, I do like every brick individually. I should probably take a lesson from that.
Wow. Yeah. You're a really patient man, Francisco.
I can be. But sometimes not so much. Actually, another technique that I learned from you that you taught me, which has come in handy, is the concept of the canary-colored splodge.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Would you care to explain that?
Basically, what you do is you have a background that you've painted, and it sort of lacks the warmth of sunshine or the warmth of candle glow. A lot of the times when you paint a background, you paint it in normal colors, and then you go, it looks kind of plain. You can get a layer on top of that, and there's a bunch of different settings you can use. You can use just a normal layer set to low transparency. You can use soft light, you know, hard light, pin light, overlay. There's tons of different stuff you could try, but you get a big splodge of bright yellow in the, you want it in the well lit areas of the background, and you just put it there and you lower the opacity until it looks, it just gives it that warmth. It brings out the warmth in the colors, and it sort of, I find it, it makes the whole background look a bit more uniform because they all shift their hues slightly towards that yellow color.
I've also found, in addition to that, that the for the cool colors, if you want to shade or add bits of shade, you can do the same thing but with a nice navy blue, and that kind of gives a little,
oh yeah,
there's a little the counterbalance to that, which looks pretty cool.
There's a couple of things to keep in mind there with the blue. Often you'll find it's a good way to build contrast, because when you look at the color wheel, you look at the opposites in order to create contrast. So you get yellow and the bright orange yellow that we're looking at, and then you look at what's opposite to it on the color wheel, and it's a purple color. So if you put the purpley blue there, that builds contrast. And also, there's another thing behind it. Light bounces. And when you have, like, a blue sunny day, the blue will bounce off the ground, the color blue from the sky, and onto the unlit areas of objects, giving them a sort of bluey tinge. So it's not just contrast. It actually does happen. If you look at certain, there's certain games, I know Skate's one of them, or Skate It on the Wii, I notice it very much. The shadows are all really blue. They've really emphasized how much the sky bounces off when there's no sunlight speculars hitting it. It's actual sky speculars.
I know.
So there you go.
A game that had very nice backgrounds that some people don't like, but I love them, is Curse of Monkey Island. And I remember reading in interviews with Bill Tiller how he talked about how he used a lot of purples and yellows and stuff in places that one would normally use them to just create that whole contrast. And it really gives it a very cozy, very storybook feel to it, which I like.
Absolutely, yeah. It's got, when you look at especially the nighttime scenes in Curse of Monkey Island, sky is this turquoise. And it brings out the yellow so well because they're such complementary colors.
Yeah,
but absolutely. He really, as you say, it's really storybook.
Yeah, the moon in that game was
actually
beautiful.
Oh yeah, sure. If you look at Vampire Story, you look at the backgrounds he's done there. He's done a similar thing, but the skies are so red and so purple, and the lamp lights and the snow just really, they really blend well together. Bill Tiller's got a very nice use of color.
Let's move on now to our segment of the show, which, as of course you well know, is called Deliverance.
Hooey, it's time for Deliverance!
You know what I hate, Bubba?
What do you hate, Cletus?
I'll tell you right now, I hate it when I'm painted in Photoshop and I switch to a new layer and I put a brush stroke on that layer and make a mistake, then I press the undo button and it switches me back to the last layer as well as erasing my brush stroke. I didn't want to go back to the last layer. All I wanted to do was just erase my mistake.
Oh, darn, Cletus, I feel your pain. If I had a nickel for every time that I started painting on the incorrect layer after pressing the undo button, I'd have about 25,000 nickels, and I could buy myself a new pair of overalls, because these are looking mighty shabby. Hooey!
And now it's time for a segment we call Feedback.
Feedback.
Today's feedback comes from none other than Paunch from the AGS forums.
I listened to the new Ben and Grundy podcast today while I was taking the dog for a walk. I quite liked it. It was an entertaining look into the creative process of two AGS superstars, but it needs to be 4 to 6 minutes longer because it ended while I was still a block away from my house. I was left tragically unentertained. Who was I supposed to listen to? The dog? All he ever tells me to do is pee on everything, and I can't afford another public indecency ticket. 4 to 6 minutes longer, Ben. I trust you will correct this issue in the next installment. Also, for all your fancy talk of MS Paint sprite sheeting and neighbor entertaining rotoscoping antics, there was nary a mention of hand-drawn stuff. For shame, Ben. Hang your pony head in shame. I may be the only AJSer who draws all of his backgrounds and sprites on sheets of copy paper, but I'm also a person who listens to every podcast that I can lay my hands on. Therefore, I am an important demographic. As such, I expect to be catered to.
Well, Paunch, I hope you're listening right now when I tell you... Sorry for not including the hand-drawn section on our animation talk. We should talk about that, shouldn't we?
We should, and I hope that the 4 to 6 minutes that we've added reading your letter out and responding to your concerns is enough extra time so that your podcast enjoyment doesn't end before you get home.
Yes, and I hope your dog is peeing right now as we're talking about this. So, so about hand-drawn...
We've just got so much class here.
Yes, absolutely. This is the number one podcast to listen to while your dogs are urinating. So have you ever tried doing hand-drawn and scanned animations?
Not once. You know, I used to do the little flick books in my school books at school, which explains why I now wrestle sheep instead of having a good job, because I was doing animations in my school books instead of paying attention. But no, I've never actually tried doing hand-drawn animation for my game.
I have. An unreleased game, which shall remain nameless, but I tried doing it for a game I was working on called Granny Zombie Killer, and I bought this book called The Animator's Survival Guide or something, which was very good. And
oh yeah, that's quite a well-known book.
Yeah, and it was actually, it helped a lot, and the walk cycle was pretty cool, and I find it a bit tedious. Power to Paunch for making his games like that, but just the whole having to scan and color each frame and all that is, it's good on you for doing the effort, but I personally think it's a bit much, especially since you're working in high res. So, if you have any feedback that you would like to have us read and mock and answer, or all three, or one of those three.
All of the above.
All of the above. Then send your feedback somehow to us on Twitter or something.
Or an AGS forum personal message.
That works too.
Oh yeah, now it's time for some reviews!
Today I'm going to be reviewing a PlayStation 2 / PlayStation 3 classic. And I say that because it was originally released for PlayStation 2 and then released as part of a remastered HD collection for PlayStation 3. I'm, of course, talking about Eco.
I recently just picked up that collection. I've yet to play it, so I'm interested.
Well, all right. Eco is a... I guess it's best described as a puzzle platformer. Basically, yeah,
that sounds about right.
Yeah, you play as this little kid, Eco, who's a little boy with horns, and you get trapped in this castle, and the whole game takes place in this one castle. So, you have kind of a limited playing field, but it's a really big castle. So you get to run around and pick things up and pull levers and open doors, and it's basically one giant escort mission because you have to pull around this girl, Yorda, and avoid her getting pulled away by these demon wraith things who come out at inopportune times and try and pull her into the ground. So you have to guide her by the hand and like get her to jump over things and clear paths for her and stuff like that. And at the time, I remember I played Eco. Sorry, I keep wanting to call it Ico, like everyone who's wrong, but it's actually Eco. When Eco first came out, I played it on the PlayStation. I remember enjoying it, and it was really, really, I guess, ahead of its time for its time, because it was the first type of that game that I remember playing back then, and playing it now, I can see that lots of other games have taken influence from it, like God of War, oddly enough, the camera angles and like staircases and things like that are
an unexpected reference.
Yes, well, you know, you gotta you gotta call it as you see it. Anyway, Eco hasn't really stood the test of time very well. I'm sorry to say, it's still a good game and it's very nice, but it can be a bit tedious at times, and it is like I said, basically just a giant escort mission. And the AI for Yorta isn't all that great. She's kind of dumb, and it can get pretty frustrating to have her be so dumb. But if you've never played Eco, I recommend playing it. I recommend you play it, Ben Chandler, because since you haven't played it...
I will.
But in that HD remastered collection, I would say that Shadow of the Colossus is the superior game. But that...
Yeah, I've started playing Shadow of the Colossus, and it's very nice so far.
It is, but that's a review for another day.
I have to say... I have to say, when playing games, often if I've got escort missions, they're the least favorite types of missions that I come across. So having a whole game based around escort missions is a very bold move, because they're not exactly loved in the gaming community.
No, they're not, but somehow Ego manages to make it work.
Okay, I'm going to review an older game. Well, it's about 10 years old, and it is called Project Nomads. I remember reading about this, you know, several years ago and thinking it sounded interesting, so I finally managed to find a copy on eBay, and I started playing it. And I have to say, I was quite disappointed, because it shows a lot of promise. It's a very varied game. You do a lot of different things. You run around like an action-adventure game, shooting magic spells at people, but then you're also building things on your magic flying rock castle thing, and then you're flying a plane, and then you're flying around with a jetpack. There's heaps of different stuff to do, and the setting is really nice. It's a mix between sort of arcane magic and steampunk, but it all kind of falls apart because none of the sections are really that well balanced, and unfortunately they seem to go with the tedious do this thing over and over and over for an hour, and then we'll move you on to something else which you'll do over and over for an hour section. So there's some really nice bits. I loved flying around with the jetpack. After flying around with the jetpack in this game, I thought, why hasn't anybody done, that I know of, a jetpack combat game where you're flying around third person with a jetpack, landing on things and dropping bombs and that sort of thing? It would be absolutely amazing, as this game has proved to me. But other than that, I'm sorry to say, it's really, really not that good a game. It's not surprising, but it was fun to go back and try one of those obscure games. You know I love obscure games, Grindislav, but sadly this one isn't that good. The voice acting, you were talking about the voice acting in The Dig. This is miles worse than The Dig, I'm sorry to say. But yeah, the graphics, considering it's 10 years old, the graphics are still really nice. But the rest of it, I mean, like I said, there's the little bits where you're flying a jetpack are just phenomenal. Somebody please make a jetpack adventure game. Like Tomb Raider for jetpack. I will play it. I will buy three copies of it.
I saw a video on YouTube, the Revision 3 Games channel. They did a special thing about like the top 5 games featuring jetpacks. You might want to check that out.
I'm going to check that out. That's amazing.
Yeah, I believe it's at Rev3Games, youtube.com/Rev3Games, to do a little bit of promotion for them. And you can just search for top 5 jetpack games.
For jetpacks. Was there any that you've played? Do you know any jetpack games from this love to recommend me?
The only jetpack game that I can think of offhand right now is Rocket Knight Adventures, the original one for Sega Genesis or Mega Drive.
Yeah, see, that's...
In the rest of the world.
That's... Rocket Knight's nice, but this is totally different to that.
I was trying to think of a really bad jetpack-related pun to relate to your disappointment. But I couldn't think of anything. The best I could do was like, well, I guess you're just going to have to pack it in. That's just really terrible.
Indeed. But never mind. We are here to deliver terrible puns and reviews.
Yes. So that does it for this week's podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening. If you have any feedback, again, you can contact us on Twitter. I'm at Grundislav Games.
And I am Ben_304.
And you can have your feedback read on the air in our mocking voices, and we will respond to you. And
absolutely.
Yeah.
And if you'd like us, any topics you'd like us to cover especially, let us know. We might do it. We're quite finicky.
Yeah, we're not limiting ourselves either to just adventure games or AGS. We pretty much will cover anything to do with the indie scene or the just the gaming scene in general. But we like to focus on it.
We'll talk about hovercrafts too.
Oh yeah, we'll definitely talk about hovercrafts.
I think the next episode should be the hovercraft episode.
Can we do it from a hovercraft?
We absolutely can. I'll meet you there halfway.
Okay, sounds like a plan. Well then, Ben Chandler, until next time.
Until next time.
It has come to our attention after editing the podcast that this episode clocks in at 54 seconds shorter than the previous one. In order to keep our fans happy, specifically Paunch, we're now going to extend it by an additional 4 minutes. If you're Paunch, then please enjoy the following segment. If you're not Paunch, I suggest you turn off the podcast now.